This is Capital Insider, your inside look at Oklahoma politics and policy. I'm Dick Pryor with eCapital News Director Sean Ashley. And our guest is former Speaker of the House of Representatives, Chris Steele. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We are just about a week away from the start of the 2018 legislative session, with a special session still ongoing. You have been a huge proponent of changes in the criminal justice system, but those efforts stalled out again last year. Do you see it playing out differently this year?
I sure hope so. I am optimistic. I remain optimistic simply because the state of Oklahoma cannot continue on its current trajectory as it relates to criminal justice policies, as it relates to criminal justice spending, and as it relates to criminal justice populations, the populations within our prisons. Just to sort of correlate, if I may, the issue of criminal justice reform back to some of the other issues that we've previously talked about. The reality is that spending for corrections in the state of Oklahoma has increased 172% over the last two decades. And it's still not nearly enough to adequately take care and provide meaningful and effective corrections for the number of people who we continue to incarcerate. Oklahoma has the highest female incarceration rate, the second highest male incarceration rate. We're projected to surpass the state of Louisiana in having the highest male incarceration rate in short order as well. It's just horrific. And the reality is, because of the balanced budget amendment in the state of Oklahoma, the more money we spend on corrections, the less money we have to spend on education, on infrastructure, on health care, or anything else that we may deem to be an important service of government. So this issue is very important, and it's very connected. I mean, think for a minute where we would be at today if we had increased spending for education 172% over the last two decades. It may be a very different story. So I think as we begin to connect those dots and as the legislature begins to really, truly consider what is going to be the best use, most effective use of state resources, maybe we'll have an opportunity to implement a smarter approach to criminal justice policy and criminal justice matters in the state of Oklahoma.
Criminal justice reform has been an interesting issue in that it has brought different groups together, the American Civil Liberties Union and the Oklahoma Council on Public Affairs, for example. Will that help push those reforms across the border across the finish line in the end because you have those agreements and mutual support?
Yes, sir. I think it will. I think ultimately what is so refreshing about the issue of criminal justice reform and those who are advocating for criminal justice reform is the diversity of the coalition of people who are supporting it. So literally, as you said, Sean, we have individuals who are on opposite ends of the political spectrum that are being reminded that we can work together to solve a problem, to move forward on policy without having to abandon core convictions. So for some in the coalition, it's a matter of social justice, and for others, it's a matter of fiscal responsibility. Both are right. And I think that this kind of cooperation as it pertains to policy development and advancement for criminal justice reform represents Oklahoma at its best. And it also reminds us of what we're capable of accomplishing when we do work together.
There is considerable research that provides a roadmap for a more effective and more cost-efficient criminal justice system. You know that information very well. But Oklahoma is slow to change, even while the rate of incarceration and other problems point to an unsustainable system. Why is criminal justice reform in Oklahoma so difficult?
I think there's a myriad of reasons that makes the issue of criminal justice reform challenging and difficult. First and foremost, my experience was, and what I'm seeing now still is, that when the legislature discusses and debates and ultimately decides what direction they're going to go on corrections reform policy or appropriations, those discussions tend to be based on emotion and anecdotes and fear. And those decisions, consequently, tend to be based on emotion, anecdote, and fear. And ultimately, to change the paradigm, the legislature is going to have to get into the place and in the position where they begin to make their decisions, as you said, based on facts, based on data, based on research. I think when we can get to that level, this issue becomes a no-brainer. But the reality is, Historically, elected officials have scored significant political points on being, quote unquote, tough on crime. And we use a particular or an isolated incident and we base policy on an anecdote. And ultimately, that has led to the highest incarceration rates in the state or in the nation here in Oklahoma. And so in order to get out of this particular way of thinking, we're going to have to change what we base our decisions on and what we base our discussions on.
In terms of criminal justice, what changes do you think actually might happen this year?
I think a couple of things are very likely to happen. First of all, to understand what the changes that are likely to happen, it might be important to understand sort of the need for the changes. So what the research tells us is not only are we incarcerating more people than any other state in the nation, the people in Oklahoma tend to be incarcerated longer, for longer periods of time than any, our sentencing guidelines are much longer than national trends. And so I think the thing that we're going to see first and foremost is likely a reduction in some of our sentencing guidelines for nonviolent offenders to bring our sentencing guidelines in line with those of other states. I think we'll also begin to see a change and a shift in the way that we potentially handle the fees and fines associated with a person who is involved in the criminal justice system to perhaps provide some incentives for good behavior in relation to the fees and fines to maybe reduce them or forgive them at some point in time. I think we'll also see a reduction potentially in the periods of supervision. If you keep a person on supervision for too long in the community, the research says you would set that individual up for failure. And so I think we'll see a reduction in the length of supervision, in addition to a desire to seek treatment over punishment for individuals who battle addiction and or mental illness. I think if we begin to implement policies that would seek treatment first and foremost for individuals who have an issue of addiction or mental illness, I think it would solve a lot of our problems.
We're speaking with former Speaker of the House, Chris Steele.
I get decisions from the Court of Criminal Appeals. I see a lot of drug court participants who have a violation. Maybe it's minor, but because of the nature of our system right now, that's putting them right into the prison system. There had been talk of intermediate sanctions, programs like that. Is that something we need to pursue, the state needs to pursue more aggressively?
100%. Graduated sanctions, particularly as it deals pertains to individuals who battle addiction or mental illness, is a must. So the reality is, and while we never hope that this happens or certainly don't condone it, what we know is that relapse is a part of the recovery journey. And just because a person relapses doesn't mean that we should give up on that individual or that we should take hope away or that we should slap a felony conviction on that individual for life and send them to prison. It means that we need to reevaluate their treatment needs, do an assessment and make sure they have the appropriate level of treatment. Should there be consequences? Absolutely. But prison is not the answer. There's not a study that I'm aware of that would indicate that prison sentences in and of themselves, and particularly long prison sentences, do anything to reduce criminogenic behavior. In fact, the reality is it often increases, makes a bad situation worse. The last thing I would say on that point, Sean, is this. There's a saying in Oklahoma as it pertains to our incarceration rates that we tend to lock up people we're mad at instead of people we're afraid of. And I have recently had the opportunity to come on the Pardon and Parole Board, and I believe that saying is very true. It's alive and well. I look at the reasons and the offenses that an individual is incarcerated for and the time, the amount that they're incarcerated, and I scratch my head and I think this person is not a danger to society or a threat to public safety. They've violated the terms of their program, and somebody was upset with them and wanted to make an example and send them to prison for a very long time. And I just don't think that that's in the best interest of anyone.
And all of that happens at a very high cost to the state and to the families in Oklahoma.
Yes, sir. So just to unpack that a little bit, it's a great point, Dick. Thank you for bringing that up. It costs, on average, $19,000 a year to incarcerate an individual in Oklahoma. By comparison, it costs about $4,000 to $6,000 a year on average to provide adequate treatment and supervision in the community. Not only that, when a person goes to prison, they are a convicted felon. When they come out, that felony conviction stays with them for the rest of their life if they live in the state of Oklahoma. And it changes the trajectory of their ability to provide for their family. And so not only is incarceration devastating on a family while the parent is incarcerated, it's devastating for the family for the remainder of time. Just to give one correlation or two correlations there, yesterday or the day before, there was a pretty significant story about our foster care system and how it is the numbers are outpacing our ability to keep up with the services that we are supposed to be providing. The number of kids in foster care is directly related to this issue of mass incarceration. I would just also add that Oklahoma has the highest number of grandparents raising grandchildren, and that also is directly related to this issue of mass incarceration. So you're spot on when you say that this issue is not only impactful to the person who's incarcerated, it's very, very much impactful to the family unit as well.
Speaker Steele, citizens normally just want their government to work. But there seems to be increasing dysfunction at the state capitol. Why can't legislators, elected officials, work together more effectively for the good of the state?
Well, they can, and they should. And I say it that way because there's really no excuse for the inability to work together to solve problems. We're Oklahomans. We're better than what we're seeing right now as far as the behavior that's being exhibited at the state capitol. People expect better. People deserve better. And ultimately, all of us have to be reminded from time to time of who we are, who we're created to be, what we're capable of doing. And so I tend to believe that encouragement is the way to do that. But the reality is our legislators need to be encouraged to do the right thing and to know that they're going to be supported when they step up and find practical solutions for the people of Oklahoma. They should be encouraged to know that they're going to be supported when they put people over politics and put the issues of our state in front of party platforms.
Former Speaker of the House, Chris Steele, as always, a pleasure visiting with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Capitol Insider. If you have questions, email us at news@kgou.org or contact us on Twitter @KGOU News. Until next time, with Sean Ashley, I'm Dick Pryor.